Brahma Vidya and Our Survival, Chapter 17. These days my mind is very agitated. I am very much restless within, exactly as I was when I left home. At that time I was restless, for I was after the knowledge of Brahman. One had to leave home and to leave the school for achieving this. And I gave up everything and set out on my search in 1916. Now I have no more that thought in my mind. That problem has been solved to whatever extent it was possible. My anxiety now is this. Our entire program of Sarvodaya, so it seems to me, would break down for the lack of Brahma Vidya. We would receive all kinds of aid from the government, but the more aid we receive, the more would Sarvodaya crumble to pieces. This does not mean that government aid should not be made available for Nayi Taleem and other programs. Aid certainly should come. Let even the whole government belong to Sarvodaya. But we should have in store something of our own in order to be able to assimilate all such aid. Otherwise, we would slow down in the measure such aid is made available to us. When I listen to all talk about constructive work, I fail to see any foundation for them to stand upon. Jesus said, "Love thy neighbor as thyself." It is easy to repeat these words as we often do. But as we reflect upon them, it dawns upon us that we cannot practice this so long as we do not plunge into the innermost core of our being. It is true that sometimes loving one's neighbor is for some reason or other expedient, and we would, of course, for that reason, do it. But what Jesus said is of much deeper import. If we measure ourselves from that deeper point of view, we shall find that our talk about equality is only superficial, and that the equality about which we talk is entirely fake. So long as we do not have the inner experience that we are all basically one, despite differences in outer form, nothing could be built on this surface equality. We pray, and of course, we derive some benefit out of our prayers, and no doubt we make some progress through it. But we do not find our hearts soaked in devotion while praying. We serve the sick. This is a type of service which excels in comparison with all others. But even there, we have built up a field for ourselves and we work in accordance with its limits. Our institutions dry up to the extent that they lack self-knowledge. Individuals have their selves, but has an institution a self of its own? Certainly not. But it is technique that is uppermost in Nayi Taleem, Khadi, Gram Udyog, etc. If anything is to be added to it, experience is supposed to be the only requisite. But a real union of knowledge and action has not yet been worked out. What I am driving at is this. Bapu had placed before us certain ideals that could only be developed in this spiritual field, not in any other. He formulated for us the 11-fold vrata by adding some more to the 5 yamas like non-violence, truth, non-stealing, etc. All these are not imagination, but are old truths. What, however, Bapu taught for the first time is that vrata is necessary for social service work. Whereas at the beginning, these were regarded necessary only for one's own spiritual progress. I had been practicing the vratas since my childhood, but the goal that Bapu placed before me was something new. Bapu taught us to serve India in a manner that would be harmonious with and would lead to the good of the mankind. And for attaining this goal, he taught us the 11 vratas. I have not got this anywhere else. Bapu also added to all this the duties of the ashram and the various other branches of activity. Thus, with the primary aim of serving the country in a manner that is consistent with and also conjoined with the good of the world, he placed before the aspirant the 11 vratas as articles of faith for guiding his life, and a whole program of action including agriculture, cow service and khadi for his own self-perfection. We are trying to do as much of it as possible. We want that what we do may not conflict with the good of the world. But what was really on the forefront is fast receding to the background. I do not thereby mean that we are not anymore subscribing to the basic principles of truth and non-violence. Rather, we are not reflecting on the question whether a really fundamental thing is blossoming within us or not. We find in the lives of Bapu and many others that they had before them some spiritual query. They never went ahead unless this query was satisfied. Jesus had lived only for 33 years, and out of these, he spent 3 in traveling around Philistine, a country as big as 2 or 3 districts of Hindustan. But today, his thoughts have influenced the entire world. I am talking not about the power of the Christian organization, but only about the influence of Jesus himself. There is no record of what Jesus did during the first 30 years of his life. It is said he worked as a carpenter. But about the form of sadhana he practiced, we know no more than that he did some fasting and that he had met the Holy Ghost. Now, it is even said that he had come up to Tibet. The fact is that there was some spiritual question which he mastered before he set out. He could not have, without direct experience, uttered the words, "Love thy neighbor as thyself," with the force with which he did. Likewise, the Buddha took up the problem of avoiding violence in sacrifices and toured through dozen districts of Bihar and Uttar Pradesh. All this we know. But we do not know what he did when he practiced penance. To what planes of existence he was elevated, what paths he traveled along, how many forms of meditation he mastered, what peace dawned on his mind as a consequence, and how he came upon the 2 most significant words, Maitri and Karuna. Of all these, we know absolutely nothing. We know what happened later on, but of the first things, we are ignorant. We have read Bapu's autobiography. Something like the above can be discerned there. We also know of the discussion he had with Rai Chand Bhai. He had spiritual doubts in his mind, and he did not set out to work without resolving these doubts. Bapu had not come to the field of social service without having had some mystic experience. He used to say that truth is God. People therefore thought him to have made a scientific utterance. But it was not an out-and-out scientific utterance. I had discussions with him on this point when there was talk about his going to help Khan Abdul Ghaffar Khan. Bapu had the feeling that he would not have to return. Therefore, he had said that he would like to talk to me. I never used to go to him, and so he knew that I would not come unless he asked for me. Our talks continued for 15 days. During the first 2 or 3 days, it was he who asked the questions while I went on answering. But one day, I inquired of him about experiencing God. You are right when you say that truth is God. But what did you mean when you also said that at the time of fasting, you used to hear an inner voice? Was it a miracle? Yes, there is something in it, he replied. And this is no ordinary matter. I did hear a clear voice. I heard as one hears a man speaking. I asked, what ought I to do? And the voice said, you should fast. For how many days? I asked. For 21 days, was the reply. Here was exactly a dialogue as between Krishna and Arjuna. Bapu was so truthful that there could be no error in his report. It is God Himself who directly said this to me, he said. Can God have a form? I asked. He replied, He certainly does not have form, but I did hear the voice. Form is non-eternal, and sound, too, is non-eternal. I inquired, if he could make his voice heard, why could he not make his form visible? I also placed before him another question. How is it that God cannot show himself to us? You had a dialogue in your mind. Has it any communion with God? Or has it not? He said, Yes, there is communion with him. I only heard his voice. I did not see him. That he has form is not known to me, for I have had no direct experience of this. But such experience is possible. I have said all this for we do not ordinarily go into the depths of our being, but act only on the surface plane. I wish to draw attention in this direction. I say repeatedly that Gandhiji did not do politics. Whatever he did concerned Lokaniti, for he had tried to enable the people to stand erect. Some of his co-workers have taken to politics. True, they are not doing the older type of politics. It may also be true that there is some difference between them and other politicians. But this difference is not very great. Thus, some of his co-workers came to politics, some others to tannery or khadi. All this is so gross work that we choose our co-workers in spite of our will. We pick them up with the main purpose of getting the work done. And then we try to get them contaminated with the ideas. But we do not try the other way around. That is to say, to start by making those who share in such ideas assemble together without any motives of acting, and then to begin a course of action only when the need for such action has been felt. Let half a dozen friends come together out of sheer spiritual earnestness and then begin to act. Instead of this, we begin by acting and then search for men. As a consequence, all action becomes action-centered. This is the source of my distress. I cannot honestly say that if God's existence did not manifest itself, I would have come to this. I must say that it is possible to experience God, to see Him, to touch Him. Otherwise, evil could not be destroyed. It is not possible that action would go on without there being a vision of God. This is how I assimilate even the atheist. The atheist also can go on so long as he is concerned with the gross social work. The atheist too is a manifestation of God. With this principle, I can accommodate atheism and transcend him and continue to grow, whereas the atheist cannot assimilate me and cannot grow unrestricted. The problem before me is, does Satyagraha represent a force? If there is any one word which contains the quintessence of my work, it is Satyagraha. At the same time, the word is not so much to my liking, for the word Agraha, which is a constituent of it, seems to me defective. The word, however, is in vogue, and so I accept it. The question before me is, what would be the form of Satyagraha in the age of atomic weapons? Those who possess atomic weapons have acquired the instrument with which they could, while sitting in their own rooms, disturb the entire atmosphere and destroy the world. We do not, on the other hand, possess any such power with which we could purify that atmosphere. And yet we need some such power. There is now no question of directly contacting and influencing through sight or sound. How then can Satyagraha operate before the person who uses atomic weapons? We are to reflect over the question, what should be the form of Satyagraha under such circumstances? After the passing away of Gandhiji, many forms of Satyagraha have been practiced in Hindustan, and fasting is one of them. Fasting used to bring about a favorable reaction. But these days, fasting has become such that, as I hear, the first reaction to it is the suspicion that there is something wrong about it. Satyagraha thus has been made impure by us. We have travelled far beneath the level of Satyagraha as conducted by Gandhiji. At the same time, that level of Satyagraha would be no more effective under the present circumstances. Instead of raising it up to a higher level, we are rather dissipating and thinning down its efficacy. Satyagraha has become a matter of setting up impediments or of putting pressure, instead of becoming more and more refined. Where would such impediment or pressure be in the face of science today? As I reflect over all these issues, I have the feeling that our entire idea of imparting education through manual work is too coarse. I have said earlier that the goal of Nayi Taleem is the blossoming of virtues and not merely teaching through manual work. Teaching through the medium of books is one-sided, but our primary aim is to manifest the virtues. And with this end in view, manual work is taught to help earning livelihood, while reflection, meditation, and devotion all come in as a means to spiritual growth. If the basic goal of self-development and the blossoming of virtues is not there, the Nayi Taleem would become a mere technique, as have become the systems like the Froebel and the Montessori. When I see all this, my entire being gets confused. I often speak out harsh words, the like of which I have never said before. The reason for this is that I am dissatisfied with myself. I have the feeling that my path should be the path to Brahma Vidya, but it has not been that. The figure of Shankaracharya flashes before my mind, and I begin to think what people think of me and of what his travels were like. It is true that the age has changed. New tools have to be employed in a scientific age. Nevertheless, their path was that of Brahma Vidya. This thought leaves me dissatisfied with myself. What I wish to insist on is that our entire work is in need of basic change. First, we have to select some from amongst the Gramdan villages and to make our full experiments in them. We are to think over the possible form that the Nayi Taleem would have to assume in such experiments. Second, we have to set up the Shanti Sena. We have to bear in mind that the entire work of Shanti Sena belongs to Nayi Taleem. And thirdly, we have to reflect over the question how we are to infuse into all our work the above mentioned ideas. These three are the main issues. Along with these, we should also think of what should be the proper form of education in the context of the entire nation. And we are to prepare the nation favorably for the purpose. I have talked about Brahma Vidya. No program of action could be framed regarding it. On reflection, something or other may, of course, dawn upon us. This, however, has to be agreed upon, that we can survive only on the basis of Brahma Vidya. Jammu, 8th of June, 1959.